Caught Offside with Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes! Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney early on a Monday. What's up, brother?
Oh, a weekend of controversy, Andrew. But let me take you to the real controversy of the weekend first.
Yeah.
Brooklyn Bridge Park, Gotham Soccer League, nine-a-side.
Is that what it's called?
It's one of the many leagues that operates in the city. So I'm invited along to play by my good friend, Michael Mickey Burgers. And we start the game in a downpour. We concede an early goal. It's silly. But myself and Mickey are just like Matip and I was going to say Lovren. Okay, Matip and Lovren. To call myself VVD would be ridiculous. But anyways, we're 1-0 down. We settle into the game nicely. And right towards, we'll say about 9 minutes left, we get a penalty. So Mickey steps up to take the penalty. Think of a Ricky Lambert style, big kind of bulky player, tall guy, and he nails it. Perfect penalty. Referee has his eyes on for encroachment. One of our players encroaches. Instead of a retake, the referee said it's an indirect free kick out. We go on to lose 2-0.
Is that?
No, that's not the rule.
He made it up on the fly.
I'm presuming so.
He took...
If anyone would like to clarify.
He took matters into his own hands.
Now, yeah. Unbelievable.
That is controversial. Shocking.
So that was the first bit of controversy. And then I rolled my ankle because I was just cruising back against a man who was effectively a square, a Shaqiri type. And I was step for step with him. And just as he's about to pull the trigger, I put my left foot in front of him and I rolled my ankle and now I'm in pain. Not controversial.
That's sad. It also explains why you came in here this morning angry and ornery, because the real controversy happened in our studio about 10 minutes ago. When you acted like just a monster, and it's the first time in like a truly long time where I actually yelled at you. I yelled at you.
Yeah.
Because JJ, we've talked about this before on the podcast, to bring people totally behind the curtain. Last year, people might remember, in the Tottenham-Manchester United game, I DVR'd it, and I told JJ, hey, do me a favor, don't send me any updates because I want to watch it when I get home. And then he proceeds to send me one text after another in great detail
to
what happened
I was drunk at a wedding, watching it on my phone during the speeches.
I was so stunned by it that I almost respected it in its brazenness. So then over this weekend, I was once again in a position where I had to DVR Tottenham and Manchester City. And by no fault of yours, because I didn't say anything about that, you just texted me and said, what do you think of the half? Not giving anything away. Totally reasonable. I said, I'm DVRing. And then you write back right away. Now, I put my phone down, so I ended up not actually seeing this message until after the game.
So, I mean, this whole argument is moot, but
right,
go on.
But it's the intent that I just can't get over.
But the intent... Yeah,
then,
okay.
You send me back a message saying you missed De Bruyne being raptured into heaven and Sissoko revealing himself to be Jimmy Hoffa's killer. Heck of a half. So the Sissoko bit, I don't even understand what you're
talking
about.
It's clearly a joke.
But the first bit...
Clearly a joke.
The first bit, when I read your text after the game, I thought, what? He did it again. Why did he need to say anything about how good De Bruyne was in that half?
But I wasn't. I was saying,
and that's where maybe there's some sort of language barrier
disconnect
here between
yeah.
us. Because when I read that message, you missed De Bruyne being raptured into heaven. To me,
raptured into heaven is not a footballing phrase.
I know that, but to me, there's no other way to read that than De Bruyne was out of this world good.
I meant he actually ascended into heaven, like
why would you make
like a biblical character?
But like, why would you make a joke about something that actually happened? Like, he was amazing.
Yeah, but that, Andrew, that was not the intent. The intent was like, to send you two ridiculous things.
Why even, like, because you yelled at me and said, how could you even think that? And maybe, like, I don't know. Like,
Let's put it out to the people.
RJ, a total third party person in this who had nothing to do with it. I said, when you hear somebody say that this guy was raptured into heaven, what would you take that to mean? He said that he was great.
Oh,
like,
my
that's
God.
How else could you read that? Like, why would you? It's like if I saw a movie and a main character dies at the end and you said, oh, don't tell me what happens. And I like made some joke about, oh, yeah, Johnny G, he's going to get it in the end.
Like, it's
why
not
would, why
the
would
same
you
thing.
Even, why would you even joke around can about you a thing that actually happened?
Arlo White would never finish the half of commentary and go, a fantastic half for Manchester City with Aguero scoring and De Bruyne being raptured into heaven. Yeah. It wouldn't happen.
All right, so let's
it yeah, was
let's
clearly
play,
a
let's
joke.
Play the literal game now. Like Maradona's hand of God. We shouldn't call it that because God's hand did not actually come down and touch the ball.
He called it that.
But you're acting like this sport isn't a sport where, like, grandiose, flowery language isn't used all the time. The beautiful game. We're always, like, things are always described in great exaggeration.
And in terms of art. Yeah, sure. But I think the Jimmy Hoffa one, if you had even an inkling.
Well, I was like, okay, I'm not smart enough to have got that one. I didn't even know what you were. But the first one, I was like, oh, raptured into heaven. Like, that was a godly performance.
By the way, we should be clear, as we are on an ESPN vehicle, and we believe in truth and facts. Sissoko in no way played a part in the disappearance of Jimmy Hoffa, head of the Teamsters Union. Let's just be clear.
And I just
that.
Want to put it out there that I was not actually mad at you about this until you came in this morning and I was like, I don't know why you said that. I was so calm about it.
Yeah.
And then you flew off the handle at how I could have possibly read it that way. And then I got angry. How could anyone
read it
any other
way? Let's put it to the people. If I send you a message saying that De Bruyne was raptured into heaven, what way would you take it?
In describing a first half.
Yes, and also to it's important, the second part, that Sissoko murdered Jimmy Hoffa. And I write at the end, heck of a half. As the details of the game, you're going to say, oh, JJ, you old joker. Right, let's move on.
So weird.
Hey,
so incredible.
Let's vote on this. Let's vote on this. Twitter.
Well, I don't want to vote on it because you have so many sycophants out there that just like are at your beck and call on Twitter, and I can't take it.
Fly,
anymore.
My pretties. Fly.
Yes, you have minions.
All right.
I don't have minions. Let's talk now. Let's go right into it, JJ. The game that you ruined for me, Tottenham and Manchester City, because this was probably your game of the weekend. It ends 2-2. Should we go right to, like, we're already mad at each other, so why stop? Why stop there? Let's just go right into more stuff that we'll probably yell at each other about. Deja vu. It's deja vu at the Etihad.
Yeah.
Identical emotions from both fan bases with the way this game ended compared to the way their second leg Champions League match ended in the quarterfinals. I guess initial thoughts on just how that all went down in stoppage time.
I think the funniest thing was, right before we realize that the goal is going to be, Gabriel Jesus's goal is going to be disallowed, we see Pep and Aguero embracing. There is a detente in their argument from previous. And it was very
hilarious.
It was so funny because it's clearly Pep going, see, I know things. You had to come off, for 'tis I who produced this by putting Jesus on. So there's a little bit of that involved in it. And then the next thing you see Guardiola along the sideline with Pep, or with Poch, and Poch is quite calm and trying to get him to be calm and explain what's happening. Not that he agrees or disagrees with it, but just what's happening. And then you see Michael Oliver basically saying, nothing to do with me, guys. Pointing at his ear.
And you see Hugo Lloris laughing.
And I laugh.
He knows what's coming.
And I laugh too, because I can't believe it happened
again
twice in the space of 5-6 months.
It was surreal. I mean, and it really truly emotionally took you back, not quite to the extent of a Champions League quarterfinal being decided, but like the fact that it was happening again to the same two teams with the same relative outcome, it was amazing. I got instantly a wave of VAR hate, which was to be expected. However, I would pretty much say to people that this, to me, is not a VAR issue.
Oh, it is.
Well,
but it's also a rule issue.
VAR is enforcing the rule.
Well, VAR is this cosmic invigilator, a Judeo-Christian god that is always watching everything. So why do you think VAR, if VAR is checking every goal, why do you think it's going to miss this? Why do you think it's not going to call it? Guys, this is what you wanted when you said you want to get all the decisions correctly, even at the most microscopic level, particularly at the most microscopic level.
Yep.
That's what you get.
Yeah,
now,
I
agree with it? No, I think that the wording of the rule is, everybody wanted clarity. The wording of that rule is so precise. It doesn't matter how it happens. Some guy was tweeting me about intent. Intent, nothing.
Throw that out the window.
Forget about it. With this particular rule in the lead up to a goal, it can flick off a tiny microcosmic piece of skin that's attached to your hand and go towards goal or be turned in the run of play, and that's it. The goal is ruled out. So it's very, very, razor's edge.
Yeah, I think this game in itself was almost a perfect microcosm of how VAR is going to be used and enforced. In the first half, you had Eric Lamela putting two arms around Rodri and taking him down in the box, and they chose not to look at that because I think there's a subjectivity to it, and they have decided this year in the Premier League that, what's the phrase they keep using? We are not going to re-officiate games with VAR. And so,
I mean,
but
that's exactly what they did at the end.
But yes and no. To them, that's a subjective play. The referee made a decision on the field. We're not going to re-referee his decision. It was close. Maybe we would have said it is, but this is not what we want to use VAR for. However, when it comes to objective calls, there is no gray area for them. And we saw that with this. The ball in the blink of an eye. I mean, no one could have possibly seen it in real time.
Nobody did.
But it does hit Laporte's hand, and they score a goal off of it. To them, that is objective. There is no subjectivity to this. And for those decisions, like offside with Raheem Sterling the week before, it is objective. You either are or you are not. The ball either touched his hand or it did not. For those decisions, that's how VAR is going to be used. Objectivity, it's 100% one way or another. Subjectivity, they're not going to re-officiate the games. And I think now 2 weeks in, this is what everybody's expectation should be moving forward. I'm not saying there won't be incidents where they'll go back and relook at a foul and change their mind, but I think by and large, the rule is going to be this.
It's not good, Andrew. It's really not good. I was reading Ken Early this morning, and he had just one paragraph that stood out to me. The problem with a formulation such as clear and obvious is that everything is clear and obvious in 4K ultra slow motion. Even microscopic unintentional infractions such as Laporte's, which had not been noticed by any of the players or officials on the pitch. And once you have decided that even fouls that occur beneath the threshold of human perception should count, you have to call out all of them in an inexorable logic of interfering, pointless pedantry. Everything now is there to be looked at. And but that is not what we were told. And I keep saying this, I don't like the wording of that handball rule. It seems to be unusually cruel. And in this case, it was.
But at least it's clear cut.
Fair. Okay, that's fair. But look at VAR. I want VAR for the egregious stuff that Michael Oliver could not possibly, that he got wrong and he couldn't be let walk away to the halfway line with. And this is not one of
them. Well, just to poke a couple holes in that comment from Ken Early. First of all, like you just said yourself, what was the words that he used there at the start of that quote? Clear and obvious. Okay, but we just talked about clear and obvious doesn't matter for the handball rule. So cross that out. Like, it doesn't have to be clear and obvious.
No.
And
clear and obvious in terms of, like, you missed this. This is the thing about VAR. It's a clear and obvious miss by the referee. A clear and obvious error by the referee. That was not a clear and obvious error by the referee.
If we're going to start adjudicating over what should be deemed clear and obvious and what should not be in situations like
but,
that,
but,
that's a such a fine line, and it takes you down a rabbit hole where the controversies will never end, because there will always be a point where your idea of clear and obvious is going to be different from somebody else's.
Nobody, Andrew, nobody, I mean, this was, again, like he said, beyond human perception. None of us saw it. No, the referees, the officials, nobody. And honestly, Tottenham, do you think a single Tottenham player, of them would have protested?
I had no idea. I saw Danny Rose put his head down. Nobody seemed to argue it. Does that mean that rules shouldn't matter?
And by the way, you know, the people getting on to me, I don't know, someone tweeted me saying, this could win the league for you. Let's be fair to
me. That's besides the point.
Yeah, but let's be fair to me about this. This is not my stance coming from a Liverpool fan. It's not a zero-sum game for me. I don't believe that, you know, it has anything to do with my fandom. I've held the line on this. It doesn't work for me. And I mean, we're even seeing things now about the frames per second and the movement of players, and that VAR can't be clear on those. Like, say, the microscopic issues in the West Ham game. The frames per second camera and the way the players are moving is not in sync. And so by the time the ball leaves the foot, we don't know if we've got accuracy.
And by the same token, I don't want people saying to me that you're just supporting VAR because Tottenham continue to benefit from it. Well, look, people will remember I was 100% with VAR when Danny Rose was ruled to have handled the ball against Manchester City in the first leg of the Champions League final. I didn't like the call, but it didn't change my opinion of what I thought of this technology. The one thing that playing off of what you just said, somebody coming at you and saying this could win you the league. I actually have a bit of an issue with a sentiment. Jay sent me a text message. We had an exchange going where first Shafay sent a message saying, wow, VAR is horrible. I'm not being anti-Spurs, just anti-VAR, ruining every fun moment in soccer.
Sure.
And then Jay said, yeah, that's brutal. That's a brutal VAR moment. To me, the goals are so punitive and the margins are so slim at the top. That's a season-changing call. So my only issue with that is, like, so our sympathy should go to Manchester City, even though technically, say what you want about it, but they broke the rule, so that goal should be allowed to stand.
But
like, why would we don't know what the margins are going to be for Tottenham. Who knows what 1 point could mean for them in terms of whether or not they finish top four or don't. So, like, at the end of the season, we'll feel better about Manchester City winning the league when they scored a goal that that shouldn't have counted, rather than Spurs having that goal chalked off and it helping them. Like, I just don't see why our sympathy would go to the team that actually broke the rule rather than the one that whether you like the rule or not, the right decision is the one that we got to. Like, so I just, like, that logic kind of escapes me.
Beyond the football.
Feel bad for the team that broke the rule. I don't get that.
I mean, it's so microbial. That's my issue with it. I would also say that in stadiums, it is affecting the fact it will, if it hasn't already, begin to affect the way we watch football and the way we celebrate football, because we're never going to be sure now about any of it.
People keep saying that. I have not noticed that. I haven't noticed a quieter roar after a goal is scored in these games.
I'd have to really think about
that.
And
by the way, like, Gabriel Jesus scored that goal and then celebrated for like 5 minutes, did that dance in front of the crowd. Yeah. Like, there was clearly no thought in his mind that goal wasn't count.
Because
people celebrated as they would.
We're still adjusting to the Big Brother invigilation from the skies, Andrew.
How long are we going to be doing that? VAR's been in play for 2 years now in the Champions League.
This is its second game in England.
But we're acting like this is like... This is just a thing that has, like, we've never seen this before because it's in the Premier League now. It's been around for a couple of years now across Europe.
It's literally just been in the knockout. Well, it's been in the knockouts stage of the Champions League. Let's keep it to what Tottenham and Manchester City fans have experienced. So they had that, and it's in its second game in England. It is in its infancy. And the IFAB, we're talking about it taking 10 years for VAR to be good, for VAR to be seamless. It's not worth the wait.
As for the game itself, the other element of this, look, I'm not crazy. I'm not stupid.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, we were using text messages earlier. Let me read you this exchange.
Yeah.
Just finished watching on DVR. Lol, 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 lol. That was Andrew.
Oh, I couldn't stop laughing the way that game ended. It was amazing.
So I replied, hilarious. That had happened again with VAR is just so funny. But also how thoroughly outplayed Tottenham were. You replied, it's an absolute crime that Tottenham got a point today. Criminal.
It was, I still, like, I don't know how they did it. I'll give you my thoughts right now on how they did it. First of all, Manchester City were so good in this game. And you're right. Like, it's wrong that they didn't win that game because obviously they played well enough to win. I know we joked about it before, but Kevin De Bruyne was basically raptured into heaven with his performance in the first half. It's a thing we say routinely on this podcast.
He was raptured into heaven, mate.
Honestly, though, like, not every assist is created equally. You know, sometimes a guy gets credit for assist when he makes a pass to somebody, then this guy will, like, dribble through eight guys and score. Kevin De Bruyne's two assists were goals. He scored goals on those assists for his teammates.
Laser-pointed passes.
And he was so good. Overall, I thought this was just, like, this was peak Man City. Certainly, they were the better side on the day. I'm not going to feel bad about it. Like I said, it's a crime that Tottenham came away with a point. I won't feel bad about it because I've seen Spurs not only on the other side of that before, but I've seen them lose games. Like Manchester United last year when De Gea made 13 saves, like seemingly all in the second half. I've seen Tottenham lose plenty of games that they absolutely dominated. So I'm crying no tears for Manchester City. And here's the thing, ultimately, is... For however great Manchester City were, for how many goals you think they probably should have scored, I know Bernardo Silva was robbed on a one-on-one chance with Lloris. It was a great save. You know, City could have scored plenty more. But let's look at the goals that Tottenham scored. Like, what are City doing there? First off, giving Lamella that kind of space where he doesn't really want to shoot that. But finally, it's to a point where it's like, all right, well, if no one's going to come guard me, I'm just going to do this. But more than that, like, where is Ederson playing?
Well, Ederson, I mean, he had a good game, not that much to do, but had a good game, and his positioning was just off. And I actually give all the credit to Lamella, because Lamella sees the defender, sees the space, and says, that defender is blocking his view. Not only has he left a huge amount
he's
of space.
On like the left side of his yeah. goal. It's like he lost track yeah. of the net.
Or he didn't expect the shot because the body's in front of him, and which he should always expect. And he bent it round the defender. I really enjoyed that goal by Lamela. I thought, if I'm talking about the good things from Spurs, Lamela's goal, Lucas Moura's introduction, he continues to be such a great bit of business by Spurs. And it's not just because he was the only bit of business by Spurs for the longest time. He's just excellent. Apart from the header, he carries the attack and the threat. Kane was anonymous. They couldn't get him the ball. They couldn't get him into the game. They didn't have the ball long enough to do it, let's be honest.
Didn't even try.
But Lucas, I mean, one of his first actions, as they say, that's the thing, by the way, now, the actions were good. One of his first actions was to go on a mazy dribbling run, carrying the Spurs.
Well, like, his actual first action was the goal.
Oh, yeah, but
he was on for 14 seconds.
Sorry, yeah, after that. Like, his first actual prolonged touches on the ball was to carry the Spurs attack down the field and kind of let them move up the field. I thought Spurs were abject. I thought they were terrible. So terrible. Even on the first goal, I know Man City find spaces. I know De Bruyne is brilliant. Sterling, Bernardo Silva are class. But when I see Sissoko, Walker Peters has just made a brilliant block a couple of minutes beforehand. I see Sissoko, and he can see Sterling's run right in front of him, and Walker Peters is blindsided, and Sissoko makes no effort to get in and try and cut that cross out, or at least jump in the face of Sterling, make things difficult. That annoyed the hell out of me. It's got to be all hands to the pump. When Spurs had the ball, they couldn't keep it. In Dombele, Eriksen, they were all guilty. Everyone was guilty of giving the ball away. Even Lloris. When you get it, and you've got to be able to ping that ball out to the sideline and control it to Danny Rose, and he overhits him, and it's a throw-in for Man City. I thought Spurs were absolutely abject. The best parts were Moura, the Lamela goal, and the, frankly, heroic defending at the
end.
But that's it. I would hope that when Lo Celso is fit, he comes in and he helps that midfield out. I would like to think that Poch, after last season, would want to push this team forward in terms of, you know, being able to be toe-to-toe with Man City in terms of keeping the ball a little bit, but City were miles ahead.
Yeah, I mean, look, here's the thing. Manchester City and Tottenham, they're like, I know Spurs have had this kind of weird success against them of late, but like, they're not in the same class. They're just not. I mean, if you look at it, you know, what were City last year? 27 points ahead of where Tottenham were. So what would that be? So who would that be compared to Tottenham? If Spurs finished last year with 71 points, what's 27 points back of them? That's like, you know, that's basically like what Newcastle or Crystal Palace were last year. That's the space essentially between Tottenham and City. They're going to have to play, you know, a style that maybe they don't want to play, where they're not really trying to attack. That's not what their innate thing
is. I'm being super harsh, because you look at the way they played against Aston Villa, you know, after the initial jitters, they dominated possession. They started, you know, moving the ball around, making chances, doing all those things. So I know Man City is a different standard, but I just expected more from them.
Yeah. And look, you're right. Sissoko was invisible, much like Jimmy Hoffa's killer. It seems like a natural comparison that one would make in a situation such as that.
It was a joke.
Let's see. We continue now.
Good God.
A couple other notes from the weekend that we do want to mention. Yeah. Of course, Frank Lampard manages his first match at the Bridge with mixed results. God, it started so well for them. The first, 15, 20 minutes of that game, it looked like they were just going to score and score and score. Wilfred Ndidi with a pretty uncharacteristic mistake. Maybe he didn't see.
He said he didn't see, but he won't. I mean, you've got to expect when they're pressing like that.
Right.
He was crestfallen even after the game, even after scoring the equalizer. No, you want to see his Sky interview. The man, unbelievable. James Maddison had to pick him up.
And you know what? I'm kind of okay with that. Like, okay, maybe it's a bit much, but Wilfred Ndidi is a really good player, yeah. And if he wants to set some insanely high standard for himself that he's trying to live up to each game, then okay. If I'm Brendan Rodgers, I'm okay with that. I mean, by and large, don't be too hard on yourself. You're one of the best players on this team. But overall, for Frank, it's two games now where it's kind of followed a similar blueprint. Really, really good to start, and then a pretty noticeable precipitous drop off in the second half. I mean, Leicester really could have gone on and won this game. James Maddison had an incredible chance
for
net that he skied over the bar.
No, the game could have been out of Leicester's reach had Kante converted, had they converted a couple of the other chances that they had early on. It's worth saying that. But on the balance of play, as things progressed, Leicester were the team that looked like they could win it late on. Something interesting that Lampard said to Stan Collymore after the game about that opening 25 minutes, which is worth listening to.
With that first 25 minutes and how positive it was on the front foot, creating chances, everybody going forward, you must also be very happy if the players are taking on board what you're trying to do.
Yeah, I was, Stan, and I think it was that was the feeling in the stadium. You know, it was very much what we asked for: energy, quality, closing people down, making them feel like this is a really tough place to come to. And I know, as I mentioned, it's unsustainable as a whole, but all those moments were great. Good to see every player in the team doing their bit. The next stage is to say that when that goes against us and it changes slightly, and it will do, this is the Premier League, we have other ways. I don't want to be seen as an attacking team that flies out of the blocks, but you can give us a little sucker punch. That can't be the way. So that's why there's some real strong lessons from today. We'll enjoy watching back the 25, but the rest of in the second half, it won't be so enjoyable. But it's important we do it because we need to improve on that.
I thought that was interesting to use the word
unsustainable.
Yeah, so why do it then?
Well, I think he means it's unsustainable over the course of 90 minutes.
I think the unsustainable part was that they literally tired out a lot of the midfield players in doing this, and that allowed a window for, like, say for example, Tielemans looked gassed in the first half. Second half, you look at the Leicester midfield and how it came into things. I'm wondering if their condition to do it, like Pulisic faded out after where he had one kind of half chance where there was a goal mouth scramble. I didn't really see him for the rest of the game.
Yeah, I thought he started well. Again, everybody for Chelsea started well.
Now, I will say about a lot of people were talking about Pulisic and kind of he was so anonymous, he was so quiet. If you look at the good things he did against Liverpool in the Super Cup, they were centrally. He seemed to stay wider in this game and kind of just drifted out of it. Which
His assist in the Super Cup came from a central position.
He did all his best stuff in the second half before he was taken off from a central position against Liverpool. So I'm just wondering if playing him wide there, they're not getting the ball to him enough. Now, a lot of the attack came down Pedro's side, so that probably explains it. But, you know, some teams, Andrew, it took Liverpool a long time to be fully conditioned to do the kind of pressing that Klopp wanted. And I'm wondering if it's going to take that long as well with Frank Lampard. One thing, Jonathan Wilson had an interesting piece in The Guardian about how the Gerard Lampard conundrum for England is materialising as a problem for Lampard again in his new career. The return of N'Golo Kante, of course, was a major benefit. His energy and reading of the game would help solidify any midfield. But even then, there is reason for concern, largely because Lampard ran into the issue Sarri never quite resolved. It's extremely difficult to fit Jorginho and Kante into the same side. They are very different players to Lampard and Gerrard, and indeed to each other. But the basic problem is similar. Two players who want to operate in the same space on the pitch. Now, Robbie Musto was talking about this, and he actually didn't talk about it in terms of, well, how do we fit them into the team? He said that in the second half, one of those has to go and man-mark Madison for a little bit to kind of shut him down, which kind of segues into a conversation about what Leicester did. Let's park Chelsea for a second. Leicester were really good.
Yeah, and I think we kind of identified that coming into the season, that they're really, like, even including the top six, there's not too many midfields that I think we feel a whole lot better about than how we feel about Leicester's midfield.
And I think if I had one criticism of Brendan Rodgers from yesterday, is like, this playing out from the back is fantastic if that's the way you want to play. But what happened to keep it tight for the first 15 minutes when you're away from home? When you know someone's pressing,
yeah.
Like, it was a mistake by Ndidi. He had enough time to get turned and get the ball up the field. But if you want to beat the press, why not go long? Why does it have to be this all the time?
I've always agreed with that. I don't know. Like,
we've seen it with Arsenal last weekend a little bit.
I guess now we can say how much of that is on Ndidi, but how much of that is on Schmeichel? He's playing against the press
as right.
Well.
Why
is he putting Ndidi in that position?
Well, because that's what's been coached to do. This is how we're going to build the play from the back. But I'm not saying don't do that. I'm just saying the press is on. You're away from home. This team are ravenous. Let's tire them out. Go a bit more direct. You've got Vardy who can spin in behind. I'm saying actually go long for a little bit. Kill the sting of the game in the early stages and then settle in to the style of play and the patterns of play you want to do.
Yeah, I suppose that there's some truth to that. I mean, look, we all know the benefit of playing out from the back against the press like that. If you do, things could be so open for you once you get
correct.
Past midfield that, you know, and maybe...
And that's why it's...
Again, Brendan Rodgers, we're talking about how great Leicester's midfield is. He may think, I can do this with these guys. I don't care about their press. These guys are... I trust Wilfred Ndidi. You know, sometimes it can come back to bite you. I think more often than not, Leicester probably can handle that. You're not going to see Ndidi make another mistake like that maybe this season. So I do get it, but you're right. I mean, sometimes it's just like, okay, like...
Weather the storm.
Exactly. Exactly right. So in the end, is that, I guess, this is now, what, the first time in how many years where Chelsea haven't taken a win from either of their first two games? It's been a bit of a rocky start for Lampard, Super Cup included.
Patience has been preached, and I think, well, the Super Cup performance, and I think on reflection, the United performance, like Lampard said after the game that he was happier with the United performance overall than he was the performance against Leicester City. So I don't know what to take from that.
How can that be?
The performance in terms of the way they played over an hour as opposed to the 25 minutes they had against Leicester.
Oh, all those minutes count the same.
Well, look, I think we're in a point with Chelsea where he who he is and the club in the situation that they are in means he has patience and time from Abramovich and those who make the decisions.
Yeah. Let's see. Arsenal win again. A couple of newcomers making a nice first impression in front of the home crowd. Danny Ceballos looked really good. Two assists. Looks like he could be kind of a game-changing player for them. I do wonder, like, Mesut Ozil, remember him? Like, that's a person.
I'm afraid you see the formation of a midfield there where Mesut Ozil just won't get into it, especially considering how the energy of Ceballos was the big thing for me. He got around the field so much. He wasn't just waiting for the ball to come to him to create. He was going and getting it, keeping it. His best contribution for me was when he came off. He appeared to be talking to Mkhitaryan on the sideline. I don't know if you saw this.
No.
And it was about Burnley. Clearly about Burnley, because he kept going boom, 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 and doing the hand gesture that suggested over-the-top balls, which it's like, welcome to the Premier League. And welcome to playing against Burnley. So he's already got that elevated sense of himself as a pass master for Arsenal. So he'll fit in just perfectly.
Yeah. Another guy, newcomer for Arsenal, that I think was important for them was David Luiz. You know, I had been critical of him in saying that we didn't necessarily love him with Chelsea, so I don't know that I'm going to sit here and say that he's a cure-all for Arsenal.
He definitely isn't, because if you look at the Barnes goal, his positioning was pretty David Luiz in those scenarios. But I had a debate with a guy on Instagram, and maybe he's right. He said anybody right now is going to be better than what the options we had beforehand.
Yeah.
Better than Mustafi.
Yeah, I know. Not to go all like American-y, but I heard similar things like here in New York, people talking about the New York Giants offensive line. Oh, they signed Nate Solder. Well, anything will be better than what we had. Well, it's still not great.
Yeah.
Like, just because it's better than what it was before, there still can be a liability. But he was good in this game for the most part, I would say. He said something afterwards that I found interesting, just talking about his whole move from Chelsea to Arsenal. He said, "I'm a guy with ambition, and that is why I moved. I like a new challenge and new things in my life. This is what gives me oxygen, what gives me motivation, and also to really enjoy the moment. I could have chosen a comfortable zone and got money and be cool, and that's that.
I also don't have to move house from the salubrious part of London that I'm living in."
Like, I don't know. Maybe, like, I can't get in his head and know what he thinks about, like, his personal situation and all that, but I'm a guy with ambition, and that is why I moved. Like, at Chelsea, Frank Lampard basically told him, you're going to have to fight for your place. Whereas at Arsenal, like we said, because of how dire the situation was, he's going to walk right in.
Yeah, exactly.
What kind of ambition is that? Like, Arsenal aren't in the Champions League. Chelsea are currently. Wouldn't it be more ambitious? Like, if we're defining what ambition is in pertaining to David Luiz, wouldn't it be the scenario where you have to A, fight for your spot in a team, and B, compete against the best teams in the Champions League? Like, isn't that more ambitious?
And as we understand from reports in the Evening Standard, he was their third choice. They could not get the two foreign players they wanted to bring in, the two foreign centre-backs that they wanted to bring in, and they inquired about Luiz basically because they thought he might struggle to get playing time at Chelsea and maybe amenable to a move. So, look, this is the way he wants to frame it, fine.
Now, in fairness to him, he did go on to say later on in this quote that he wasn't sure that Frank Lampard factored him into his plans, and so it might have been the best for everyone to go in a different direction.
Look, I'm going to enjoy watching him, whether it's his suspect defending or his ability to ping a ball out from the back and land it right on someone's toe 40 yards down the field. He is going to be good to watch. I will just say one thing before we finish on Arsenal Burnley. Remember they hammered Fulham last season and allowed 21 shots? Well, they didn't exactly hammer Burnley. The XG, according to Opta, was 1.3 to 1.3.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and also Arsenal allowed 18 shots. So, I'm just saying, like, there's
That's a little bit of what their MO was last season in terms of like XG statistics. We talked about how that great start, that unbeaten run that they went on, that it was going to catch up with them at some point.
And it did. So I'm just wondering. Now, they've got players to come in. I think we should see more of Torreira, and we're going to see Tierney when he gets fit.
Yeah, it's so. Still... what. Like, I'm putting you so on the spot right now, but what if you were Unai Emery? Like, what is the preferred 11 here? I know he has a style that he wants to play, and he's going to try to adhere to that. But I don't know. Like you see, like you said, Tierney.
I think
injured, but like Pepe, I don't know.
I think it would be his preferred formation is a 4-2-3-1. I would say Tierney will come in. It will be center backs would be interesting, but he'll definitely see Luiz, maybe.
I think center backs we pretty much know right now.
Right, okay.
It's going to be
Luiz,
and it's going to be Socrates.
Yeah, well, then it'll be a midfield of, or further up front will be Ceballos, then you'll have Pepe, then you'll have Lacazette and Aubameyang up front, I think. But I don't know. He's not afraid to tinker, and he will rotate. So
it's just like, especially the weeks where Lacazette doesn't start, and Pepe didn't start again this week. Which, okay, fine, new player to a team.
And Arsenal
Torreira
fans
didn't start. There's a lot of talent being left on that bench.
Well, Torreira, I mean, they're managing Torreira's minutes because he played in the summer in a tournament, and like there's a lot of that to factor in, I'm sure. But there's a lot of Arsenal fans. You talk to them online, they're convinced that from now on we'll see what me and you always wanted to see last season and only saw it 20 times in the league, which is Lacazette and Aubameyang playing.
And how did it turn out for him this week?
Pretty, yeah.
Pretty good. One more for you, just because I always like your perspective on Newcastle.
Because it gets me in trouble.
Well, I just find it interesting. They're a club that's interesting to me. They get rocked by Norwich City. I guess before even getting into Newcastle, we should say, like, Teemu Pukki.
Very weird. Struggled in the Premier League in Scotland with Celtic. Goes to Bromby. No one from Glasgow Celtic was bothered about him going to Bromby. Goes to Bromby. Has to be convinced to step down to the Championship with Norwich. 33 league goals later, including 4 in the Premier League. Unbelievable. Looks like a real striker, although I will say Newcastle did not make it hard for him.
Pukki, last bit on him, he was top scorer last season in the Championship and player of the season. And it has, I mean, look, it's very early, but it has carried over at least to the first 2 weeks of the Premier League.
His agent deserves a lot of credit for telling him, look, go to the Championship, play with Daniel Farke.
Yeah. Morale at Newcastle right now is low. It is really, really low. From the moment Rafa left, you thought, okay, well, maybe, like, and like this refusal to get behind Steve Bruce, fine, it is what it is. You thought maybe if they can start this season off a little bit on the right foot, it was going to be hard in the first week, but the second week you've got Norwich, maybe you can kind of like get a few people back on board, and it's just like morale keeps finding new depths to sink to. It's not helping also that Rafa Benitez has continued to speak. In The Athletic, he said this about his departure from Newcastle. Newcastle's board had a year to sort out my contract, but when we met after the end of last season, they didn't make me an offer that I could accept. After that meeting, I knew they would not come back with a serious offer, and when it arrived 19 days later, it was for the same salary as 3 years earlier, with less control over signings. After 3 years of unfulfilled promises, I didn't trust them.
Completely fair. I think that's what he's been suggesting. Maybe not to, obviously he did it to a publication, The Athletic. Usually it's on his blog at Rafa Benitez Web, where you can check up on all his goings-on, including his time in China.
Where apparently he's earning double what he was earning with a Premier League club.
Yeah. It's interesting. This is the first time he said, it was for the same salary, suggesting that his salary was also an issue, because the line we were hearing was it was entirely about bringing Newcastle forward and funds. So it was both, but probably less control over signings seems crazy. Less control. I mean, you barely had any control. Incredible. But yeah, what did Rafa bring to them? We talked about it on last week's podcast about what he brought to Liverpool. Compact, organised defending. And that's all gone. And now Joe Linton appears to have an injury. Alan Shearer is in the papers today talking about he doesn't know why Almiron is playing so deep. You know, we know he wants to help out, but we need him in the box. Just not good.
No.
And Newcastle fans going to newly promoted Norwich and being thwacked like that will not go down well.
Yeah, and none of this is going to help. I don't know what their boycott situation is for their next home match, but all of a sudden, like, I don't know, it's just getting very bleak. Very bleak, very early for Newcastle up in the Northeast. I'll tell you what, we'll take a very quick break.
Before we do,
oh,
can I mention a few things that there'll be angry furore if we don't mention them?
Yeah, of course.
Everton get a win against Watford. No goals conceded at home since the 6th of February for Everton, which is Fortress Goodison, they tweeted this morning. Sheffield United down a pathetic Crystal Palace for their first win back at Bramall Lane in the Premier League. And Klopp's mentality giants were in town. Mentality giants to get over the line versus Hasenhüttl's Southampton, although that was Danny Ings. Could have had a double against his own team and we could
got
have...
Got one.
He did. Well, Adrian helped him out there. And the second one is the one he'll really want to have scored, because that's a striker's goal where he's got to make contact with the ball, but he didn't, and Liverpool get away with it.
Yeah. Let's see. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, there's a couple other games that happened elsewhere in Europe that do need to be mentioned as well. We've got a big mailbag, what to watch for, all that stuff. Don't go anywhere. Oh, back now on Caught Offside. Christian Pulisic did not score.
Didn't score, but if you're if you're going to enter the competition with the hashtag Caught Offside Pulisic, at least follow us.
Oh,
that's kind of the point.
Yeah. Like we said, the competition then is ongoing. We are waiting for somebody to come the closest to predicting his first goal, and if you do, we have a jersey for you.
Very nice. Yeah. Borussia Dortmund 17-18 jersey. Yep.
Let's see, JJ, we continue now. Manchester City, not the only defending champion from a league that hit an early bump in the road this past weekend. Let's go to La Liga, where Barcelona opened up on Friday against Athletic Bilbao with a 1-0 loss, thanks to the timeless
Arduiz.
Yeah. 38 years old.
Unbelievable. I'm going to give Barca a wee pass on this one, though. You're missing Messi, who, unfortunately, not unfortunately, because he's the world's best player, but there's been no move away from Barcelona playing through him and him being the absolute focal point of everything. So when he's not there, they are a weakened,
of course,
a weakened side. But this was set for an upset. So it's the first game away at the San Mamés Stadium. There's a raucous home crowd. New look for Barcelona. New midfield. No Busquets, no Rakitic in there to start. Starts in with De Jong playing in the centre. And a 38-year-old comes off the bench. And it's not like he taps it in. It's an unbelievable scissors kick into the bottom corner, past Ter Stegen. It's an amazing moment. And the noise from the crowd was just something special. It just seemed to me all set up for that kind of early season start that Barcelona have had in the past. Maybe not for a few years, but it's happened before.
Yeah, the only reason I'm a little bit slower to give them a pass is that they have played without Messi before. You know, last season they beat Real Madrid 5-1. Last season in the Champions League they beat Inter 2-0, both games without Messi. So, like, again, take him. You're right. Like, you grow accustomed to playing a certain way when he's there. But, like, the gulf in talent between what was still out on the field with Barcelona and what was out there for Athletic Bilbao, like, Barcelona should still be winning that game. They dominated possession, but the problem was end product, and maybe that's where...
They didn't actually create that much.
No, that's the thing, is I think shots on target, even though Barcelona had something like 72% of the possession, I think shots on target were actually like 5-3 in favor of Bilbao.
Yeah.
So, yeah, end product was an issue for them. I wonder if Frankie de Jong was maybe playing a little bit too much of a defensive mindset, and that is maybe something that's on Ernesto Valverde, that he'll have to figure out how to best use him. But, yeah, I don't know, like... Up front, you still have Griezmann, Suarez, and Ousmane Dembele, and it just felt like... Now, Suarez did hit the post, but you're right, there wasn't a whole lot created by Barcelona in that game. So maybe Messi is just that influential, that without him, this is... Like, it can't be that feeble, though. Like, there's... I don't know. Those names are still such truly world-class players.
Yeah, I just think... They haven't played that much together, and certainly not in with that formulation of a team. It happens. These early season shocks can happen. I'm not going crazy yet.
You're right, but it can matter. Atletico Madrid did win. Real Madrid won 3-1. One thing with Atletico, I don't know if you've seen anything since. João Felix, he left with an injury, did he not?
Well,
so I guess
I only saw flashes of that game. It was against Getafe, wasn't it?
Yeah.
There's one unbelievable where he gets the ball in the halfway and just he's been hacked halfway down the field and he still controls it, gets it into the box. I don't know what his injury status is, but we should...
And the goal, Kieran Trippier with the assist. He'll do that. We know he'll do that.
Oh, yeah. What did I say? He was the best crosser in the Premier League.
He will do that very well to Alvaro Morata scoring the goal. Fans of both Tottenham and Chelsea probably watch that thing. Oh, my God. Although, like I said, Trippier, that is what he does. It's just, is he going to do the other stuff? And in France, JJ, Rennes come from behind to stun a Neymar-less PSG. 2-1, your final there.
Yeah, we should talk about this just quickly. Two shots on target for PSG, one of them being the goal by Cavani. The goal was the worst goal in terms of exhibiting why playing out from the back should not be done every single time. The Rennes player has it in his own box, goes to play it back to the goalkeeper, completely overcooks it, the goalkeeper can't react, and Cavani just slides in and scores. Niang's goal for Rennes was beautiful, and Del Castillo's winner was just a cross that was hung up and nobody bothered to defend it. If you look at this team though, Draxler, Marquinhos, Verratti, Di Maria, Cavani, Mbappe. Guys.
Yeah.
Come on. It's pathetic.
I mean, Neymar matters, but much the way I felt about Barcelona losing without Messi.
This team was good enough to compete against Rennes the other night. Now, Rennes are a better team than people. I mean, I know they finished 10th last season, but they are a better team than those who may not have studied them or heard about them, but they are decent. But to be that weak and limp away from home is really bad for PSG.
I'm just so curious how the Neymar thing is going to play out. I really, like, here we sit, August 19th, I have no idea where he's going to wind up.
I think the policy is that Tuchel should just forge on without him. Just keep going without him until such time as he realizes he can't go anywhere, there's nowhere to go, and he resolves himself to commit to the team.
Well, there's a report that Neymar was willing to take like a 50% pay cut to go back to Barcelona.
I don't know.
It's like, if that's true...
I'm bored of it already, though. I really am.
Well, I'm just curious, if you're PSG and you lose him, and now like the window is shut for the Premier League, like you're going to get so much money back, you would think there would be time for a club like PSG to go out and make other moves. Now, if the window shuts on them, they lose Neymar. Presumably, whoever they lose Neymar to, there will be some exchange of players going back PSG's way. Although now you look at Real Madrid and all of a sudden Zidane is talking about how important Gareth Bale is to what they're going to do, which is unbelievable.
We'll get to that.
It's insane. Oh, man. Still a lot to get to, actually. But first, I want to tell you about this, JJ. I want to tell you that hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done. ZipRecruiter.com/offside. Here's the dealio, Celia. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. Their powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter's so effective, in fact, that 4 out of 5 of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within just the first day alone. So here's the deal. How can you be a part of this? I'm going to tell you right now. Listeners to this podcast can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/offside. That's ZipRecruiter.com/offside. OFFSIDE. ZipRecruiter.com/offside. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And mailbag time. Give me a fist, Yota. You're going to have to explain to people what that has anything to do with the mailbag.
Well, that Sigur Rós and that call from the Euro 2016 England-Iceland game is because this very podcast is listened to by members of the... I suppose I'm going to get this wrong, so I might as well just do it. The Breiðablik team in Iceland. So Tumi Olason, the son of Ola, because that's the way they do their names, reached out on Instagram from Iceland. He is a supporter and youth team player for Breiðablik in the Icelandic top flight. They listen to us when travelling to away games in Iceland.
Amazing.
How cool is that?
What is even happening?
Crazy.
Yeah.
First the Australian team listened to us, and now players from the academy at Breobleck are listening to us. Their academy produced Gylfi Sigurdsson and our very own Aaron Johansson. So they are second in the league. But unfortunately, Andrew, they lost out to Víkingur Reykjavík in the Cup semi-final last Wednesday, 3-1. So that was really disappointing for us because we are now all in. We got to get jerseys.
Yeah.
We got to get jerseys.
Jerseys from them. And what was the Australian club? Busselton FC?
Busselton City.
Busselton City. Okay. Yeah.
We need them.
Maybe now my two, after like Team USA, Spurs, Union.
Breobleck.
Yeah. That's you
know,
how it works.
You know what we should do? Live podcast from the Icelandic Premier League.
Done.
I would love that. But Toomey, thanks for reaching out. It's awesome that you guys listen. Imagine them going across the frozen tundra. Well, it's more than frozen tundra. It's basically volcanic rock and ash listening to us.
Right. They're driving through like the
volcanic ash and geysers.
The incredible landscape of the Icelandic countryside. And as they're doing that, the soundtrack to what they're driving through is... Just breathtaking. Breathtaking.
Our nonsense is the backdrop to some of the most beautiful scenery.
That's
anyway,
great.
Beck Owen reached out because this is just horrifying. In Texas, we have rattlesnakes during our 7v7 games. Imagine taking a sideline kick with that on the line. Look at this. And it's not...
Wait a minute.
That's a rattlesnake.
On the field.
On the field. I mean, I'm not playing in that game. Do you want to play 7v7? Yes.
How can anyone be expected to concentrate?
But like, look where this...
With that just kind of like dangling out there as a thing that can happen, that could strike at any moment.
Imagine the team talk. All right, boys, keep it nice and tight, early 15 minutes, you know, and then we're going to try and get at them down the sides. Not too close to the sides, though, because there's snakes.
Sometimes when people are frustrated with the officiating, they'll say, like, God, it felt like we were playing two teams today. We were playing them and the officials. Like,
then the officials and the
snakes. And rattlesnakes.
Jimmy, why aren't you running at the fullback? Because there's a f***ing snake on the sideline. Nick Welter. Hey, guys, love the New Order plug on the last podcast. I grew up with parents who loved listening to them along with groups like Joy Division, The Smiths, and Tears for Fears.
Is this you from a burner account?
Because I grew up with those groups being played, I grew to love them just like my parents, and I'm a huge fan of the alt indie rock music scene. How old are your parents? Really, probably just children.
Well, he's 22, so if his parents I don't know, mid-40s or something, that would have been in the heart of
You're right. I'm only 22 and don't have a great knowledge of music from that era. Just curious if you had any suggestions on groups to check out. Oh my God, there's so many. Depeche Mode are one, and I would suggest listening to OMD, Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark. Love the pod, you guys are great. Been listening since December 2017. You got a listener for life.
Nice.
Thank you very much. Tosser of Coin. I'm pretty sure he shouldn't have read that out, but anyway. Listening to Atzio Soccer Pod question about players who could have been world class if not for injuries. Thoughts on Michael Essien and Theo Walcott?
So Walcott, that's a good shout. As for Michael Essien, I kind of thought
he
was
achieved
world class.
That.
I really thought he was a great player.
I think he did achieve that with Chelsea, but what happened after that was that injuries just really derailed his career. But he'd already achieved world-class status at that point, right?
That's how I view him.
Whereas
I don't know.
Theo Walcott had injuries, but Theo Walcott without the injuries would still be kind of the inconsistent player he's always been. I don't think he would have been anything different.
Maybe. We don't know, though, how that affected... Like,
you think
knee injuries, things like that, for a guy who's so predicated on speed. I don't know. Who knows?
Maybe.
Who knows?
By the way, he's still playing. We should mention that.
Yeah, true.
Hudson Kuipers. Hey guys, just curious about your reaction to Gareth Bale getting the start for Madrid this weekend after the drama with Zidane, especially considering Isco and Vasquez were on the bench and can fill in for Bale. Well, once Hazard couldn't start, Zidane probably wanted balance on either side with two ball-carrying attackers in Vinicius and Bale. And then down the middle you had quite slow and cumbersome Benzema. So they needed strong running, and the midfield was Kroos, Casemiro and Modric, which is fairly one-paced. So I guess Zidane wanted pace and direct running out wide, and And that's why Bale got the nod. And he set up the opener brilliantly.
This is all so weird. Almost to the point now where if you look at the things Zidane is saying now as compared to what he was saying a month ago when he basically said Bale has to go, like it almost makes me wonder, is this all been some kind of motivational technique on this guy?
No.
I don't think it is.
I think it's pure pragmatism kicking in. Hazard couldn't play and he looked at his options and thought, let's attack them down the sides. And that's what they did. And by the way, I absolutely mushed Celta Vigo last week. I thought they could be really good or there'd be a relegation candidate.
They lost Real Madrid. They could still be
good. They were at home. They were a bit limp.
They could still be good. But like now you've got like Gareth Bale teammates. We've been led to believe that his teammates maybe didn't necessarily want him there. But Casemiro said this week,
he has to play.
He's given us titles. He's scored in finals. He has lots of respect from us all. He has to play. He's a great player and is very important for us. So I don't know. I'm now moving forward under the assumption that Bale is a Real Madrid lifer, basically, and that he's probably going to go on and be the best player on the team this season. That's okay. Just like where we're headed.
Finally, Timmy Ross 90. This is a question that comes up quite a lot. JJ and Andrew, as someone who hasn't played soccer since I was 7, what is the difficulty level of kicking a corner? To me, it's baffling to watch Trent Alexander-Arnold kick corners. He can hit pinpoint balls from set pieces and in play, and corner kicks against Barcelona, I may add, but I feel like it's 50-50 from the corner. But it's the same with Mo Salah. I feel like they hit it super low and at the near post. Is this a Klopp tactic? I know they score a bunch from corners, the most last year in the Premier League, but just feel like Milner isn't on the field kicking a corner. It's 50-50 if it'll be a good ball. That's a lot of teams, though, that hit the first man. And often it's zonal marking in the defence that the first man will go and stand in a position that's advantageous to cutting out that low corner. Or and also, sometimes when you're trying to whip it to the near post, you don't get enough on it and it ends up being cleared. Now, you have a policy that if you don't clear the first man, you're fined. And if it happens again,
well, it's a big thing for all the great things that Christian Eriksen can do on a free kick. His corner kicks sometimes leave a lot to be desired. In fact, the corner that Spurs scored on against City over the weekend was taken by Eric Lamella. Like Eriksen gets mocked by Spurs fans a lot for not being able to get past the front, the near corner man. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'll defer to you. You would have a better sense of how easy or difficult it is than I.
I don't know. It depends what you want to do. If you want to ping it, which is not try and curl it, just drive it in, that is quite easy. That's a straight run behind. But if you want to whip it and put a lot of bend on it, you are running the risk of not getting enough underneath it and it gets cleared. But they're not terribly difficult. I do agree that sometimes you see players take them and you get just so frustrated when it's corner after corner. That's not very good. Yeah. And Milner seems to have a better technique than some players in the team.
Yeah. Also, my policy is on in-swingers.
Oh, you're
that's the policy.
No, you said you had a policy that you would fine people who repeatedly hit the first man.
I've said so many things over the years, it's very hard to keep track.
We have hours and hours of us just saying things.
It's very hard to keep track of everything.
So that was the mailbag.
There you go. Quick what to watch for, JJ. Leagues Cup. I'm basically, because we're recording on a Monday, I'm kind of not going all the way here. I'm kind of just doing stuff that is going to happen during the week. And then the weekend, you're on your own to figure that out. Tuesday, 8:30 in the Leagues Cup, Club America and Tigres. 10:30, Cruz Azul against the LA Galaxy. Yet another tournament for everyone to
sink their teeth into. Cruz Azul, they're my team in Mexico.
Oh, that's right.
Boyhood fan.
MLS, lots to talk about. I'm going to do more MLS in a moment with our red cards and man of the match, but I will tell you some midweek action. Wednesday, 8 o'clock, DC United and the New York Red Bulls. Wednesday at 10:30, LAFC and the San Jose Earthquakes, which actually is quietly become a very fun matchup. If you remember, these two, when they met in the U.S. Open Cup earlier, Bob Bradley had some kind of pointed words about Matias Almeida's coaching of San Jose. He was trying to not be insulting, but the way in which he went about it, where he was kind of like, it's not what I would do, you know, that kind of thing. I don't know. To me, it seemed a little bit prickly.
But in fairness to Bradley, he's not the only one. I don't know the context of the comments, but I mean, Almeida's been man-marking all over the field.
I think some of it was about that. About, you know, it's not how I would coach my team, but then he kind of qualified it by saying, but the good thing is we can all have our own ideas.
Like, Bob, a little bit more man marking at Swansea would have gone down a treat.
Oh, don't be like that. Come on. Look at LAFC. They're flying right now.
Kidding.
Oh.
I actually agree with Bradley. I wouldn't man mark everywhere.
Leave the past in the past. And like I said, it's only Monday, so I'm not going through the whole thing, but I do want to let everybody know that this weekend is rivalry week in MLS. So basically, you've got your El Tráfico, you've got the Red Bulls NYCFC, you've got Seattle Portland, Houston Dallas, like anything that you would consider a rivalry, it's all happening this weekend. This weekend's going to be crazy in MLS. Europa League qualifying first leg, Thursday, 3 o'clock, Torino and Wolves in their quest for European football.
Which is like a tasty, tasty game. There was once a tournament called the Anglo-Italian Cup, which was pitted lower Italian teams against lower English teams, and this would have been a tie in that back in the late 80s.
It was the predecessor to the League's Cup, essentially. Let's see, JJ. Actually, before we get to red cards and man of the match, you have something for the people.
Oh my God, yeah. Summertime is here, Andrew. Well, it's actually drawing to a close, although it's baking. While you may be breaking out the baseball cap for a day at the beach or the ballpark, if you're wearing it to hide thinning hair, you may not have to anymore. Don't sweat hair loss this summer. Do something now while you still can, Timo Pukki. 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. Why do guys turn to weird solutions or do nothing when they can turn to medicine and science? ForHims.com is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and other wellness supplements for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. Well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. No waiting room, no awkward in-person doctor visits. Save hours by going to forhims.com. Stop worrying about sunblock on that spot of thinning hair and do something to help stop hair loss and help promote hair growth. Order now. My listeners will get a trial of Hims for just $5 today. Right now, while supplies last. See the website for full details and safety information. Go to forhims.com/offside. That's forhims.com/offside. forhims.com/offside. Don't go all pooky on your Barnett.
Red card.
I'm going to go first, JJ, and I'm going to do one of those things where, like, when we have actually two man of the matches, so we kind of have to find a way to shoehorn one of them into being a red card. That's
lovely.
What I've done here. My red card goes to you and me. That's right.
Oh.
Because we haven't really said a word about what's happening in Minnesota this season with Minnesota United FC. Like, I got called out by Shafay for not having talked about the Philadelphia Union, but we don't really have that person in our lives to do that for the way we've talked about Minnesota, or the way we haven't talked about Minnesota.
We do, or they've just kept silent.
Well, or here's the thing. We actually have talked about them. I made Mason Toy my red card last week for the spitting incident. So it's time that something nice is said about what's happening
other
there
than bodily fluids.
Right, because it really has been amazing. They picked up a last-minute draw against Orlando over the weekend thanks to this in stoppage time.
Long throw in by Metanier. O'Connor across that line.
What's his name?
Abu Dhanladi. The atmosphere is brilliant. The stadium is brilliant. And they are meeting it with their kinds of performances at home. They extend their home unbeaten streak now to 7 straight. Maybe it's weird timing to bring this all up now because it wasn't a win. It was only a draw. And they were probably disappointed not to have won with how wasteful they were. I think shots in the first half were like 15-3 in their favor. But they struggled in attack of late despite scoring once in this game. It was definitely better from them going forward. This team is second right now in the Western Conference. I mean, think of where they were a year ago and just how far back in the pack it seemed like they were. Second in the Western Conference, finished with 36 points last season. They're well clear of that already at this point this season. It's been an amazing turnaround. It's been a lot of fun, I'm sure, for Minnesota United FC fans, and they deserve some recognition. So that is why my red card is them. But in a good way.
My red card is not dissimilar in its weird kind of composition, because this is kind of a red card and a man of the match. Bolton Wanderers, This is from the BBC. Bolton boss Phil Parkinson says he contacted the English Football League before Saturday's 5-0 loss at Tranmere over welfare concerns after playing youth players in every game so far this term. Just three senior outfield players were fit for the trip to Prenton Park. Wanderers, who are in administration, are currently awaiting the completion of a takeover by Football Ventures. I've spoken many times in the past couple of weeks asking young players to go again. It's not right. We sent an email to the EFL explaining about our concerns over the welfare of our young players playing these games in quick succession, but we were told we had to play the game. When contacted by BBC Sport, the EFL said welfare checks are in place for any under-18s playing first-team football. Bolton's first game of the season against Wickham had been under threat of suspension until the EFL confirmed that Bolton had provided sufficient evidence of financial viability. The club, who cancelled three pre-season friendlies after players claimed they went 5 months without payment, were allowed to sign James Weir and Josh Earle prior to the opening game. Bolton's front two in that 5-0 defeat were Edward Brown and Ronan Darcy, who are both 18. Their midfielder, Sonny Graham, turned 17 in June this year. So Bolton are in dire straits right now, and I can confirm they won't play Doncaster. They've cancelled their game against Doncaster tomorrow night because they refuse to play. They're worried about their young players, and they're refusing to play them again in a game. Meanwhile, Bury, who after 134 years are on the brink. This is the latest from the Manchester Evening News. The club have been unable to begin their season after the EFL were left unsatisfied by Bury's evidence that they have the necessary funds to complete the season, and as a result have been set a deadline of the 23rd of August to avoid being expelled from the English Football League. Should their season begin, in any case, they too face an uphill battle to avoid sliding further down the Football League. A 12-point deduction was handed out also to the club by EFL after owner Steve Dale and the club's creditors agreed to a company volunteer arrangement order, effectively a rescue plan, to clear some of the Shakers' debts. There are so many clubs in dire straits right now, and yet the perception probably outside of England is that English football is in the rudest health. There's an unbelievable exchange between Steve Dale, the owner of Bury, and a player who claims he hasn't been paid in 6 months. Wow. So, from Bury to Bolton, it's incredible. It's really sad.
Yeah, that's bad.
Caught Offside's Man of the Match.
So from the bad to the good, Joseph Martinez is my Man of the Match. He scored again. What else is new? That's now at least one goal in 11 straight games. It's 21 goals in 23 games this season for the Venezuelan. Let's go a little deeper, though, on not just him, but this game. For all the supposed ups and downs this season with Atlanta, the slow start, the team's frustration with their own manager that they haven't really been shy in venting, look who's now sitting atop the Eastern Conference. That's right. It is not going to be a Toronto FC-type season coming off their title for Atlanta. Atlanta are now first in the Eastern Conference, tied on points with Philly, but ahead on tiebreaker as they played also one fewer game than what Philadelphia has played. So Atlanta, their climb back to the top, it took a little while, but they are there. It was a fun game, actually, this Atlanta-Portland game. Lots of action. Brad Guzan had a big night. Portland had a goal taken away from an offside decision. The ramifications for Portland could actually be huge. They're currently tied with FC Dallas for the final playoff spot in the West, but they're ahead on tiebreaker. Dallas, meanwhile, became the first club this season and the 15th in league history to overturn a three-goal deficit to get a point. They did that over the weekend against Montreal, and they did it all in the final 31 minutes. They were still down 3-1 in the 83rd, but they managed to get two late goals to tie there. So they are tied right now in the final playoff spot with Portland. There's a lot going on. The final few weeks, or I guess it's a little bit more than that, but the final couple months of the season is going to be really, really fun. There's a lot still to play for. But yeah, props to Joseph Martinez, because for whatever bad we want to say about Atlanta this season, he has been spectacular. He, in some ways, in the absence of Miguel Almiron, has kind of carried them. Now, I should say this. The goal, I don't know if you saw Martinez's goal. The ball from Julian Gressel was amazing.
Yes.
So, like, I talked before about, like, De Bruyne, not every assist is created the same. Sometimes your assist is the goal. Now, Martinez still had work to do. He chipped the keeper, chipped Steve Clark. It was a brilliant finish by him. But, I mean, for Gressel to pinpoint that pass from, like, 50 yards the way that he did, it was fantastic. It was really, really great stuff. So Atlanta are finding their stride at the right time. Maybe they're still not playing exactly the way that you like from what we saw last year under Tata Martino, but they are quickly becoming, I think, a lot of people's team that they think could face LAFC in a final. So, yep, man of the match, Joseph Martinez.
My man of the match is a blast from your past. AVB, Andre Villas-Boas. Marseille manager Andre Villas-Boas had to gesture for his players to thank their travelling supporters after a limp performance in a goalless draw with Nantes, according to the Daily Mail. Following the stalemate, the visitors had trudged off the pitch and toward the tunnel, incensing the Portuguese boss. Villas-Boas was then caught on camera, furiously ordering his squad to applaud the away section, who had watched their side once again fail to pick up a first victory of the season. Now, I know why he's doing that. He's got to keep the Marseille ultras on side while they negotiate this tricky start to the season. But I do like it. Far too often we see the away team just go off straight down the tunnel or a half-hearted limp clap towards them. When you think about the travel involved, when you think about the money spent that away supporters put into supporting their club, you should really, after every game, go over right in front of them and do what Brendan Rodgers and Leicester did at Stamford Bridge at the weekend and give them a full applause. I mean, they deserve that much.
Good for AVB.
Yeah.
Don't forget about the fans. We're people too. JJ, before we get out, I do want to say one thing I just saw pop up at ESPN FC from Sam Marsden and Moises Llorens. Barcelona are set to make an offer to sign Neymar on loan from PSG this week with an option to make the deal permanent next summer, sources have told ESPN FC. Sources close to the Catalan club have explained that no players are likely to be included in the offer, while discussions are ongoing as to how much they will suggest for the price of a transfer in 2020. So, again, it's a rumor right now. Yet another rumor to stack on top of all the other rumors, but that is the latest from our own company on what they're reporting.
Interesting. So, we should also mention that since we last spoke, Coutinho is now in Bavaria.
Yeah, he is with Bayern.
Indeed.
Yep. And before we get out, just to go back full circle from our argument to start the show, when you said you would never say anything like that to describe... You described VAR. I wrote it down after you said it because I wanted to make sure I said it. You described VAR as a Judeo-Christian god. But the idea of De Bruyne's performance being described as raptured into heaven is what was I thinking, that we would ever speak so flowery?
He's a constant invigilator. He watches over us morning, noon, and night. VAR is adjudicating this podcast right now.
And they're doing fine work. Hey, this was fun. Enjoy the week. This a nice Monday pot to get people started on their week. This will take you through beautifully. Have a good week, everybody. To you, I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
See you later, man.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.